Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, and welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, and my co-host, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr. And this is part two of the Farm Babe interview. Thanks for listening, and let's get back to it. Tell us about farming, like conventional farming versus organic. We got into like some of the pesticide stuff with Food Science Babe, but like, explain to the listeners.
What does it even mean?
Explain to the listeners. Like, I always hear like, well, who cares? Like, they still have to use pesticides, but they're just organic pesticides that probably have all sorts of other stuff. Like, what's
natural pesticides count as organic? But I don't, you know, that gets talk about beyond our expertise. Jeez.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I would say probably about 95% of organic farmers I know, and I'm talking about farmers, like real farmers, not like a gardener that sells locally at the farmer's market, but like people, which is fine, which is well and good. But actual farmers who make their living farming commercially, whatever, like probably about 95, 97% of them that I've met only do it because they can charge more money.
Yeah.
And so that's the reason why farmers go organic is generally speaking is because it's a market. They can make more money. But on the flip side of that, the government's making more money because they have to go through a lot of certification steps. So there's a lot of money to be made through the government, through the food corporations. The farmer can get paid more. But on the other side of that is, yes, there are a lot of regulations in place to ensure something's organic. But the whole premise of organic started out fine, you know, where they're like, oh, we're going to focus on soil health and biology and all this stuff. But like the more research that's come out about organic farming doing the right thing, the more non-organic farmers have adopted that tenfold. So whatever an organic farmer can do, a conventional farmer can do just as well, if not better, because they have access to all the tools in the toolbox.
Yeah.
So where an organic farmer, you say, well, I'm limited. I can only spray this product. Whereas as a conventional farmer can say, well, we can spray a product to handle that problem. And it's safer and it's better and it's in a smaller dose. So it really boils down to marketing.
Yeah.
And that's really all it is. It's a way for food companies to make more money. And it really doesn't mean much in terms of health or safety. I don't buy organic just based on the bad marketing. Once again, it's like, if you want to talk about why you think organic farming is better, do that. But don't say, if you're not buying organic, you're poisoning your family and GMOs are the devil and, you know, it's not safe and organic food is pure. And it's like, organic food is not pure. Like, I can tell you all sorts of organic farmers. I have been to a shit ton of farms. And it's like, the organic ones, they spray. They do it sometimes more than non-organic. Like, it's the biggest scam. And
oh, man.
But to the point of organics, it's like, I understand, like, I want to support organic farmers in the sense where it's like, it's a business decision. So, like, if you choose to do that route, by all means, grow organic, sell organic, whatever. Like, people will buy it. You can make a premium, do it. But I would say in a lot of regions I've been to, organic farmers are switching away from it because they're paying so much to get certified. Mm. They're paying so much for all this paperwork and all this stuff. I've heard organic farmers say like, well, I'm not a farmer anymore now. I'm just like an office person. Like, I'm just a paper shuffler now.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I mean, there's regulations in place, but then also with organic livestock, you're not really allowed to treat them with any type of medication. So, you know, if as a, I used to raise about 700 head at a time of cattle and sheep myself for, I did that about 7 or 8 years. So I was a livestock farmer. I couldn't imagine somebody, actually it happened to me, where I had a sick lamb and my veterinarian would not prescribe me the antibiotic I need. That's the other thing. Antibiotics, people think, oh, we're just out there just using all these antibiotics. You can't. Like, I tried to get an antibiotic to help a sick lamb and my veterinarian couldn't do it because legally, because of the VFD, which the FDA rolled out in 2017, you cannot even prescribe these antibiotics unless you've been to the farm within the past 6 months and you have a relationship with that farmer. So the veterinarian was like, Michelle, I'd love to help you, but I haven't been out to your farm in the last 6 months and I cannot give you that prescription or I would lose my license. Wow. So, you know, I was like, what the hell, dude? Like, this lamb is like, it's about to die. Like, I need your help, you know? And he was really busy that day. So I ended up calling a different veterinarian that I knew had been on our farm in the last 6 months. And she was able to help me out. But for people to just feel like, oh, you know, you can just pump these animals full of antibiotics. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, that veterinarian would lose their license if they, you know, there's a lot of regulations in place. But it broke my heart because here I am watching this lamb suffer, but because the FDA and these regulations and this red tape and all of this stuff is actually preventing us from caring for our animals the way that we know how to, but we have to respect the laws and the veterinarians, you know, their licenses. And so, you know, there's a lot of moving parts, but it's like, we always just want to take care of that animal as best we can. And fortunately the lamb was fine after I was able to talk to a different vet, but.
So it sounds like in the earlier 90s, there weren't as many laws and they were pumping them full, which, you know, we care as physicians, antibiotic resistance, and who knows what's going on.
And I guess I'd like to know, does that actually matter? I mean, what are the harms of that stuff back from the 80s, 90s and before, the pumping of antibiotics?
Well, I hate the term pumping them full of antibiotics.
Well, yeah.
Let's just say that they used to be more commonly used, right? And then, you know, they did find issues of antibiotic resistance, and they did find ways to improve, and they did crack down and all that stuff. So all that is fine and good, right? So I'm not opposed to regulations as long as the regulations are done, and it takes time, right? I mean, the VFD and kind of phasing out those antibiotics takes a long time, because in the meantime, we've got decades worth of research learning proper, better ventilation, you know, computer, like different data points, you know, where you know exactly what that temperature is of that barn at all time. And it'll send you a text message notification that says, hey, barn three is, it's 5 degrees cooler than it's supposed to be. Well, that prompts you to say, ooh, I got to get out there and see what's wrong with my barn. Why is the temperature not right? And so it's technology. 20 years ago, we didn't have a text message notification. 20 years ago, we were using antibiotics because it's just what you needed to do. Mm-hmm. But now we're saying, yeah, you know what? We found a way to improve digestion, improve genetics, to try this different diet that helps them ruminate better, that helps rate of gain better. There's just every single day we're getting better and better and better, but that story is not always told. People have outdated information. You know, you have people saying, well, I was on a farm and it was disgusting and there were all these antibiotics. And it's like, okay, well, when was that? Well, I don't know. I was a kid. Oh, okay. So you can't compare the iPhone 13 to the rotary phone. You know what I mean? Like it's just,
sounds like big pharma. So it's not to get too far, but I'm just trying to make an analogy for us back in the 90s, early 90s, late 80s, whatever, big pharma, they were giving cruises out. I don't know, crazy stuff. Football games, baseball.
We missed out.
We missed out.
Yeah, and Spencer's been trying to figure out how to ruminate better for years.
So the thing is, the people think we're big, you know, big pharma shills. We every podcast, we're like, we don't make money. Not yet. We haven't yet. We could.
We say this every time.
We could, but we don't. But we could if we want. But so the lots of new regulations. So it sounds like things have improved, and it sounds, I don't know.
Yeah,
I need to go visit one of these. I need to be the judge, because and I need to show up unannounced to one of these places so they don't clean it up. You know, maybe like, oh, let's make sure this looks good. Based on what you're saying, I mean, I trust your judgment. I do want to see one of these farms, because I'm like, you know, it's hard to know what you believe, because we're physicians. We're experts in our field of clinical field, at least. But like, you know, when some people make these claims and you're kind of like, I don't know anything about this. Is this true? And it's like, you know, I'm watching the Fairlife video. I'm like, oh, I was like, I feel bad for that cow. I don't want to drink this milk anymore, even though it tastes delicious.
Gosh. You know, it's
and
funny.
That's and that was their whole point. And that was their whole goal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's sad. It's, so Spencer, so I have a 7-year-old daughter and a 10-year-old boy. And so Spencer knows them very well, obviously. And so the other day, Brooke, she made some comment that, you know, made me think, oh my gosh, she's going to kind of trend vegetarian. You know, she was like, oh, the animals or something, you know, eating. And then there's Trey, my 10-year-old boy, who's more of a meathead than we are. And we've had discussions with him before, and he goes, why would anybody not eat meat? And he's was very passionate about it. And we thought that was pretty funny. I think I told Garth Davis, our vegan bariatric surgery friend.
Yeah. He's super vegan guy. Interesting.
Are you really friends with him?
Yeah.
Poor Garth's listening to this guy.
I hope he's listening.
We're friends with everybody.
Go ahead. What are you going to say?
I have seen and heard some of the things that he has said about animal agriculture, and they are so far off.
He has an online personality that is different than his real life personality. Well, at least we'll say. Sorry, Garth. But
yes.
Yeah.
So let's run through a few other things.
Talk about farming.
He's done a lot of things wrong.
We should send
him a link right now and just have Garth and Michelle go at it, and we just sit back and laugh.
That should be a podcast.
We should make a podcast.
We should do that. I know. We should have anyways. All right, we're going to go
I would love to have a conversation. But the thing is it's like you have people that do this for a living. Like farmers farm. They work with these animals all day, every day for a living. I travel to these farms for a living, you know, almost every day I'm on a different farm. I'm doing all these things and I'm seeing it with my own two eyes. I would like to know how many farms Garth has been to, because if you hear what he says, it's like zero. Or maybe he's that guy that went to one 30 years ago.
He got a might be less.
In and he's into hearing his information from people that have no background in animal agriculture. No,
the reason we should get him back. I think he print the way he turned vegan, and we can confirm this, but I remember him telling us he printed out pictures of abused animals, and it got him disgusted of animals. And I don't know if he might have visited a farm and he like it disgusted. I'm not sure. We should get him on and ask him about it.
I don't know. We should seriously get both of you guys on if you're up for it. It would be fun. It might be a little bit confrontational, but you know,
I would.
But it, you know, could be fun for people. I'd like to run through some other things too, because there's all sorts of stuff, and that we might have to do like 8 different podcasts on these topics. But are you up for some other questions about myths, Spencer? I'm sure you have some questions, right? But tell us about, so like some of these myths that I've seen. So producing ethanol is, I'm just reading one right now. It says it's unwise because it takes more energy to produce than it yields. But I think that's a myth. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, so when I was a corn farmer, hold your applause, I was farming corn in Iowa. I know, shocker. We actually sold our corn for ethanol. And I think the big thing that people miss about the ethanol industry is that when we grow corn for ethanol, it's not going just for ethanol. Every part of that corn kernel is used. So yes, when we sell our corn to ethanol, part of it goes to ethanol, but part of it goes to distillers' grains for alcohol. Some of it goes to pet food. Some of it goes to dry ice. Some of it goes to the ice that's used to salt the roads in the Midwest for the snow and stuff. That comes from corn. There's actually 4,000 uses for corn. So when people say, oh, it's ethanol, it's like, oh no, part of it goes to ethanol. But that ethanol plant also recycles into a ton of other byproducts. So it's, you know, I would argue ethanol is great because it's not just ethanol. Ethanol has its advantages and disadvantages, right? Like, am I going to be pro ethanol overall because it supports corn farmers? I mean, like, kind of, yeah, you know, if I'm being honest with like a bias there. But I also think that people are missing all of the byproducts, that it's like, do you drink alcohol? I mean, where does that come from? You know what I mean? Like, nobody ever questions the carbon footprint. Don't you dare take away my whiskey, you know, but nobody ever questions the environmental footprint of that. Where does ethanol alcohol come from? It comes from a lot of times corn, which comes from ethanol plants. Like, it's crazy. So there's a lot of different things about that, but, I don't know. I mean, how can ethanol be that bad when you're growing it and producing it and processing it right all in the state of Iowa for Iowans. Like it doesn't get any more local and recycled mm-hmm. than that. You know what I mean? Like what's so.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
It's a great point. Cool. So other things. So, you know, you talked about the environmental footprint. And so that's another, and I don't know if it's marketing or if it's how true it is, because, you know, you talk about extremists and you get into the politics. We obviously care about the environment. We mm-hmm. don't want to continue damaging our earth. And there are people out there who think that whole thing is a myth. What about the contribution of, you know, like methane from ruminant animals such as cows and Spencer?
Well, there's a lot being done to address that too. So if you look at the dairy industry, they're actually on target to be carbon neutral or better by the year 2050. I believe it's 2050 or 2040. So that's the other thing too, is nice. I've toured a lot of these methane digesters where nowadays I would argue big, you know, people want to put down big ag. I would argue big ag is actually much more environmentally friendly because they have the economies of scale to take care of problems like methane. So 97% of methane actually comes from cattle's mouths. It doesn't even come from their rear. And so a lot of people are saying, oh, cow farts. And like, that's not even where it comes from. So it's crazy interesting. But so for a lot of these renewable energy companies, though, they're able to take all the manure from these large scale farms and put them in a methane digester and harvest that methane and turn it into fuel and turn it into energy, where you can literally power homes and businesses from methane from cattle manure, which is pretty awesome. So
I can barely contain myself, because the more you just discuss that, the more I think Spencer,
I love
like
it.
Oh my gosh. Something about more coming out of
methane but, coming out of my mouth.
There's a lot that's being done.
I don't even know if I can finish
mitigate
this
methane. And you know, if you look at the actual EPA statistics, all of agriculture accounts for 10% of US greenhouse gas emissions. 10%. And if you break that down further, 4% of that comes from animal agriculture, and just over 2% of that comes from cattle. And so what else is cool about cattle is that we are able to divert tons upon tons upon tons of food waste into feeding cattle. So like rejected produce, like, so for example, Simplot out in Idaho, potato company, I toured one of their feedlots. It has 135,000 head of cattle. And it was really an amazing place. Like, and what's cool about it, part of the reason it's cool is you think about the mass production of potatoes to feed us all. There's potatoes that are black, spotted, misshapen, deformed, that like will never really make it into consumers' hands. Those are all diverted into feeding their cows. So Simplot started a cattle feedlot specifically for a place to divert that waste. Because they're like, we don't want this to go into a landfill. We want to see if we can recycle this. So cattle are the ones eating the fodder and the sticks and the straws and the shells and the hulls and rejected produce and all this stuff that is not good enough for us to eat, but cattle can eat it. So now you've got, with the US GHG emissions, according to the EPA, just over 2%, you're also getting thousands of byproducts. So yes, it's meat, dairy, leather, textiles. It's also musical instrument strings. It's lotion, soaps, cosmetics. It's renewable energy. It's, all sorts of great things. I mean, it's like sporting equipment. Like, you want to toss around the old pigskin? Like, do you watch football? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, do you watch football? You're not vegan, you know? And so it's just stuff like that. There's really no such thing as vegan. I mean, even like vegans that say, oh, I'm going to eat this food, it was probably still fertilized with animal manure. And it could have even been the power to power the plant could have come from recycled livestock manure or methane. So, I mean, when I see the cattle industry, I think of probably one of the most sustainable industries because they're recycling everything.
Fire that pigskin. Like,
what happens with billions of dogs and cats when they die? They just go in the ground.
Oh,
what happens when billions of livestock die? We recycle and use everything. You know, I mean, everything dies. And I think it's the right thing to do. Any farmer would argue that that's the reason why they farm is because they care about raising animals. So whether you love your dog and cat or you love your cow or your chicken, you still love these animals. And at the end of the day, they're all going to die. The only difference is that when one thing dies, it becomes a recipe, and one thing dies, it doesn't. I mean, I hate to put it bluntly like that, but when you think about it, everything dies. I'm just keeping it real. I am just keeping it real. It's
hey, don't remind us.
Yeah, no, God, we're
Jesus, please. Jesus, lady, you're scaring us.
Yeah, we're fairly sensitive people.
We're, all right, I'm gonna go get a Xanax now.
So here's another one that's a similar thing that I think everyone's heard about along the same vein about how much grain it takes to produce, say, beef. You know, the one I'm looking at right now says it takes 16 pounds of grain to produce 1 pound, but but there's some sort of misconception that started from some guy's book a long time ago that used incorrect numbers. Is there anything concerning about any of that?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely truth to grain feeding livestock for sure. I mean, like, I was a corn and cattle farmer myself. I guess what I would say would make that sustainable, I guess, is it comes from my backyard. So you're not like trucking it or shipping it all over the place. It's like, it's all right there and it's all just the circle. So when you grow the plant that feeds the animal and then the animal poops and then you take the poop and you put it back on the field. And it's just this constant cycle of nutrient regeneration and taking care of the soil. You can also do, like, you know, grazing, regenerative grazing. You know, there's every system has its pros and cons. So if we want to talk about reducing methane, feeding cattle could do that. So, like, okay, here's a great researcher to look up, Dr. Judith Capper. Dr. Judith Capper is one of the people that has studied this extensively. What are the differences between grass finished versus grain finished? Where does that come from? Because when you feed, let's say, for example, you have a feedlot where you use a hormone steroid, which you can in beef cattle, and you feed them grain. Now, all of a sudden, they are going to market almost twice as fast as maybe like a grass fed and finish, where you're getting a much greater yield, which reduces methane because it's like their life cycle isn't as long and you're producing more meat with fewer resources because now you have a steer that can grow to 1200 or 1300 pounds in, say, 18 months compared to grass fed, grass finished that can go on for a very long time, that doesn't get as big, that doesn't produce as much meat, that's not as good of marbling. So there's pros and cons to every system, but I'm not going to dog on grass-fed and grass-finished either, because something like 2/3 of agricultural land can't even be used for actually growing crops. It's like this soil regeneration where it's like rocky, uneven soil, like the Western Plains, where you've got these cattle going for miles and miles. And it's because of this nutrient recycling that it's actually a great thing for the environment. So, yeah, I forgot exactly what your question was.
It started with the amount of grain needed to.
Oh, yeah, grain.
You know, a pound of beef. Although I guess that does almost jump into, you know, once upon a time, I think we were perhaps convinced that grass fed, you know, beef was better than grain fed beef and all that stuff once upon a time. And then, you know, really, from our perspective, it kind of turned into, you know, had to do with fatty acid, macronutrient balance and all that stuff. And we were like, well, geez, might as well just eat one bite of salmon and just blow that whole thing out of the water, not worry about the whole grass fed versus not. And just get low fat.
So every time I make that argument, so I'm always like, it doesn't matter for health purposes. But then people say it's the ethic. It's how they treat the animals and pasture raised is better. So, and whatever.
It ends up coming back to that. So then there you go. There's your question, I guess. Is a cow who is grass-fed, does that person, a cow, have a better life than than the grain-fed cow? Is it an ethical issue?
You know, I would argue that it depends on the region and the climate, right? So I think when people think of grass-fed, they just think of sunny days and rainbows. Yeah. They don't think of blizzards and frozen waterers and, you know, ice and hurricanes and 100-degree weather and natural disaster and all of these things. So, you know, I mean, it's I would argue that cattle can be happy in all different types of environments. And I don't know, like I've been to some really awesome feedlots. I've been to some great pastures. I think there's really, doesn't really matter either way. You know, they can receive great care regardless. I think in feedlots, you have better control of their environment because like, you know, in some of these large feedlots, for example, I'll use the Simplot one as an example. They've got cowboys that run these pens every single day, multiple times a day. So when you've got a more confined area, you can see and visually get up every single animal and you can visually see and work with and monitor their health daily because they're in a space that you can see. Versus if they're out on pasture, maybe they've got, you know, hundreds or thousands of acres to roam or whatever, you know, it may be harder to wrangle them and monitor their health and, you know, sort out different livestock because it's like such a bigger area. But regardless, I mean, any, again, it's like, there's a system for it, right? Like ranchers still have a way to like get their animals into smaller pens and spaces if they need to work them in a chute. Right. So there's, I don't know. I don't really think it matters at the end of the day. Once you get into like poultry and pigs, I think it matters a little bit more because pigs can't sweat and poultry are just little chickens that are defenseless against so many predators. You know, cattle don't have the predators, but mm-hmm. I made a meme once. I know we've got degrees in memeology. I made a meme with a chicken that was like up to its beak in snow.
That's
and it
great.
Said, be free range, they said. It would be fun, they said.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, I mean, when science and technology and farmers realize that they can take better care of their animals indoors, and even if it costs them tens of millions of dollars to build indoor facilities, nobody's going to spend that kind of money unless you're going to get your ROI. It's still business. So if you're raising chickens outside on pasture and just letting them free range and do whatever the hell they want, you're going to lose a lot of them to predators and weather. Whereas, okay, now I just spent $10 million on these buildings because you can monitor, control their environment. They're in a climate controlled environment. It's kind of like us. Would you rather live outside 24/7 or would you rather be indoors where it's climate controlled? If you had to pick, you know, being outside 24/7 would really kind of suck, you know,
yeah.
Like
would,
you know, I want to go outside and go to the beach when it's nice out until it like thunderstorms and gets 20 below and like 110 yeah. degrees. Like, screw that. I want to be indoors where it's comfortable.
Yeah. Seems like I've read a lot of children's books or watched cartoons about chickens and hens and stuff. They're always getting eaten by wolves and coyotes and foxes.
We think they're delicious and other animals think so too.
Yum.
Thank you so much. Great topic. And I look forward to the No Holds Barred with Garth Davis. And,
yeah,
and
we're
maybe
just
we'll
gonna
get
be
Danielle Bilardo on there. Too.
We're gonna be sitting back. We're gonna be sitting back, just eating popcorn, laughing.
Popcorn, like the Michael Jackson meme.
Yeah. Just snacking on. All right, here's the outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.